How should we spend our festival days? You see, throughout the year, we celebrate more than 10 prominent festivals. Like every month, we get one festival like Nityananda Tridashi or Gaur Purnima or Ram Navami or Narsingha Chaturdashi. After some months are filled with plenty of festivals like the Damodar month, the Kartik month. How should we spend our festival days? You see, throughout the year, we celebrate more than 10 prominent festivals. Like every month, we get one festival like Nityananda Tridashi or Gaur Purnima or Ram Navami or Narsingha Chaturdashi. After some months are filled with plenty of festivals like the Damodar month, the Kartik month, and November, October, November, because Kartik month is very dear to Krishna. So it's Radharani's month. So naturally it is very dear to Krishna. He has performed one leela every day practically. One day he lifted Govardhan Hill, one day he did this. So every day becomes a celebration in Kartik. But otherwise, in the other months, when we celebrate festivals, we have occasional festivals like today, very auspicious day. So, as we heard the other day, Madhava Tithi means a very auspicious day, and especially such festivals are offered by the Lord for us to uplift ourselves. So these days should be fully taken advantage. One should not pass this day in a journey, traveling in a train, here and there, not doing much. But one should stay in the Sangha of devotees and take maximum advantage of this day. So the meaning of taking maximum advantage is especially two things: hearing the glories of the Lord by hearing his pastimes, and taking part in the Harinam Sankirtanam, taking part in singing the holy names with full absorption, and taking part in all different services on that particular day, because rendering service on any day is different from rendering service on that particular festival day. You earned some special mercy. Just like some young man, he was a businessman moving from one village to another. So while traveling, it got very late at night, so he decided to retire in that village only. In those days, when people would go from village to village, when they wanted to retire, there were many dharmashalas. Or mandapams would be there. So he just went to one of the mandap, which was little sandy. He just took a broomstick and he swept it all. And then he slept there in the night, and next day morning he got up and he went off. But that mandap happened to be a mandap of a Vishnu temple. So in the next life, this is the same man who became Prahalad Maharaj, because he swept the floor in a mandap of a Vishnu temple. So although he was born in Asurakul, he became a very great devotee. So why I was telling you, the day on which he swept the Vishnu mandapam was not same day today, Narsingha Chaturdashi day. So he performed this. Now we may ask, how did Narsingha come before Prahlad came? And you may have a question. Actually, these pastimes are cyclic, they are not linear. Yeah. It's not linear time, it is cyclic time. Like Prabhupada writes, even in Satyayuga there were Krishna temples, Prabhupada writes. Ambarish Maharaj was worshipping Karau Harer Mandira Marjan Adishu. He was cleaning a Krishna temple. Savai Mana Krishna Padaravindyo. When? Which age it is? Satyayuga. So which means even Prithu Maharaj worshipped Krishna in Satyayuga. So some people say Krishna came only in Dwapara Yuga. How he was worshipped in Satyayuga? So this is all cyclic. Krishna was worshipped in the previous yugas also. So by rendering some service on Narsingha Chaturdashi day, he got the benefit of becoming a Mahabhagavata devotee in the next life, simply by rendering some small service. If you simply sweep this temple hall, you become a pure devotee in the next life. Can you imagine? It is as easy as that. So on festival days, rendering service is more special than rendering service on any normal day. Because on any special festival day, the particular form of the deity or the form of Acharya, they are more prominently present. Although they are always present, but on that particular day they are more prominently present to especially release the great mercy on those who are eager and enthusiastic for service. So, like today, the personalities like Lord Narasimha Dev, Prahlad Maharaj, they are all very prominently present today. It's a festival day. This is what I was telling, you should take advantage of this day by hearing, chanting, glorifying, and by rendering service, and maximizing our connection with spiritual activities and minimizing our bodily requirements. That's one of the reason devotees fast on such days. That's the main reason actually. There is no other purpose of fasting. So, the purpose of fasting is you don't have to spend time in the kitchen cooking and buying sabji and cleaning, washing. You know, our maintenance of the body is reduced. By minimizing the bodily maintenance, we can maximize service time to Krishna. His purpose. And whichever personality is prominent on that day, we should try to understand. Like today, in this Darsama Leela given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are hundreds of themes which could be taken from this and discussed. Probably one or two themes I will touch today. It's a very elaborate pastime. But what we should try to do, every time the festival day comes, I'm telling in your temple here, for example, if the lecture is going to be given by the inmates here or whoever is coming, you could progressively focus on one theme in the section. For example, in Prahlad's Narasimha Dev's pastime here, one of the first themes that comes is how Hiranyaksha was killed, and then Hiranyakashipu is specifying the relatives of Hiranyaksha. It's a very nice section. The whole section talks about the difference between body and soul, how one should not lament for the dying body. It's a very philosophical section. If you read that section, you will feel probably Hiranyakashipu is also some acharya or somebody, some very great guru. Some guru is giving lecture to his disciples. He is apparently so enlightened. But his so-called enlightenment comes to be known eventually when he exhibits a desire to kill Vishnu or when he acts inappropriately. So that teaches us a very valuable lesson. The sum and substance of that section is, even if you are highly enlightened in the Vedic knowledge, there is no assurance that you will not misbehave. So knowledge alone doesn't make us great. The application of that knowledge is the most important thing. That is why when Sanatana Goswami was telling Haridas Thakur, he said some people preach well, but they don't behave well. Some people behave very well, but they don't preach well. But he said, but you are a great preacher and you are also setting a very good example. And he said, so you are the spiritual master of the whole world, he said. So two different aspects, preaching and behaving. So Hiranyakashipu is doing what? Only preaching to his the relatives, bereaved relatives, the Hiranyaksha's wife and the Hiranyaksha's mother, all are weeping. So he's pacifying them, speaking to them very nice words, very similar to the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when you see that. In fact, in second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there are not many stories also. It is too dry philosophy. Here he tells many little nice stories also. Like Kulinga bird. Many nice stories are there in that section, if you see. Very nice section to read. But then even after very beautifully, nicely, thoroughly explaining about the soul and body and everything, his knowledge is a bookish knowledge, theoretical knowledge. Probably he must have learned it, so he's just repeating it, but he never has made an attempt to internalize this knowledge and apply it in his life. This can happen to any of us also. We may just learn something and we may parrot it. Parroting it means what? We may just repeat it. When Prabhupada talks about the Shukadeva Goswami repeating, he says, he was not the type of parrots we find in this material world. Material parrots, you know, they may, Hare Krishna, if you tell them, they may say Hare Krishna also. When you catch their throat, they will say, ka, 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 they will say. But Shukadeva Goswami was not that type of parrot, he says. He was such a parrot that he repeated with realization. So, but we may know this knowledge and repeat it without realization, the proof of which will be seen by our behavior, eventually. If one lacks appropriate behavior, we can know that his knowledge is theoretical. So that is one section, the beginning, which we could discuss. Then further proceeding, you find that Hiranyaksha plans to become immortal by severe penances. But before that, he calls all his, you know, associates, demoniac associates, all big, big demons, and even the names he is calling them. That section I was planning to discuss today. Because in that section he is giving them many instructions, what all they should do by going all around the universe. In Bhagavad Gita 16th chapter, Krishna talks about divine and demoniac nature. So here also you will find the demoniac people, demoniac nature, what are their characteristics is very vividly explained. Hiranyakashipu's desires, what he wants to do. What will a devotee gain by knowing the demoniac desires? Will it not give devotees a sense of superiority over the demons? And will they not get into a critical mood with respect to demons? We may have such questions. But if you read that section, we can understand if any of those demoniac qualities is there in us in traces, we can eliminate that from our hearts. And also, in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna assures Arjuna in the beginning, Dvau bhutau sarga etasmin daiva asura evacha. He is telling, my dear Arjuna, there are two types of mentalities. One is divine, one is demoniac. And then he is saying, Daivo vistarasha prokta asuram partame shrunu. Till now I told you about divine very briefly in just 2-3 verses. Maybe first 7 verses he gave, 16th chapter. And then he's saying, now I am going to tell you elaborately about demoniac. And he's telling Arjuna. But then he's assuring Arjuna, do not worry, you are not of the demoniac category. Then Arjuna may ask, then why are you telling me so much about demoniac? Divine you said only briefly, 7-8 verses, but demoniac you are talking in great elaboration. Why? The reason is very simple. In the material nature, most people are demoniac. And the divine nature is very less. But then Krishna assures Arjuna that you are divine nature. You are born of divine nature, he says that. But we, by studying about demoniac nature, some demoniac nature that is in us can be gradually removed by sincere endeavor. Like for example, he's telling, in one of the verses he says that krodha parushyame, whatever that was, ajnanam chapi jatasya partha sampada masurim. The demoniac assets, he's saying, dambo darpo abhimanascha krodha parushyame vacha ajnanam chapi jatasya abhijatasya partha sampada masurim. He's saying, dambo means pride with no qualification. Darpo means pride for some qualities that one has. In this way he is saying, abhimanascha, ahambhav. Then he is saying, krodha, parusha means harshness, ajnanam, ignorance. So these are all the roughnecks which always go in a gang together. They are never separate. All these qualities, they gang up together in a person's mentality. So he is telling that these are demoniac qualities one should make an effort to give up. In the same manner here, Hiranyakashipu with his associates is making plans to create trouble in the universe. There's a section, we will read that. And one more reason why we are reading this section, when Kanishtha Adhikari is very in a preliminary stage, he cannot tolerate the criticism against moralists. He cannot tolerate the criticism against other religionists, the Kanishtha Adhikari. He will say that, ye bhi theek hai, wo bhi theek hai, sab log theek hai. Kisi ke bare mein bura mat bolo. Don't say anything about anybody. This tendency is there. So that is why Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about six types of materialists. He says the first type of materialist has no faith in God, no faith in morality, he says. Then he says the second type of materialist has faith in morality but no faith in God. And third type of person, he says, he has faith in morality, faith in God also, but his faith in morality surpasses his faith in God, which means faith in God is subservient to morality. Like that he says. So all these are counted as materialistic people, asatsanga. Although they may be very moral and everything. Similarly, here you find Hiranyakashipu, just a few minutes ago, he's talking such a big philosophy to his mother and sister-in-law and all of them. And then you find the next moment, what is he planning? This goes to show that those who are faithless in God, they may even have such kind of worldly wisdom, worldly knowledge and everything. They may be moral on one grounds, but when it comes to God, the way they behave. So, Madhyama Adhikari is one who comes to a point where he can clearly distinguish between Dveshis and the Bhaktas. And the sister-in-law and all of them. And then you find, the next moment, what is he planning? This goes to show that those who are faithless in God, they may even have such kind of worldly wisdom, worldly knowledge and everything. They may be moral on one grounds, but when it comes to God, the way they behave. So, Madhyama Adhikari is one who comes to a point where he can clearly distinguish between Dveshis and the Bhaktas. So, it's very important for a devotee to desire to develop a distance from the Dveshis. At that time only you become Madhyama Adhikari. In fact, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, when a devotee's heart becomes filled with great anger for the non-devotees who are trying to create a stumbling block in the path of devotees, at that stage one becomes Madhyama Adhikari, he says. Generally we find if you are not Madhyama Adhikaris, then even if somebody is talking ill of Krishna, we don't feel any pinch. Take no problem. That is his opinion, it's my opinion. We feel like that. So you read the 11th canto, he's saying that when one sees the non-devotees turning against Krishna, the Madhyama Adhikari cannot tolerate. His blood boils practically. Of course, that's why he is told that he has to keep distance from the Dveshis. Why? Because then he cannot show compassion. Because when he sees the atrocious nature of the demons. So you can see Srila Prabhupada says about himself that I am a Uttama Adhikari, but I came down to the level of Madhyama Adhikari to become a preacher. So Prabhupada was a very vigorous preacher. Giriraj Swami Maharaj, when he came, he asked Prabhupada, Swamiji, so many people are teaching about God and I am very confused. Who is saying the right thing? Somebody says you are God, somebody says you should worship God and all that. Who is right, who is wrong, I don't know. Prabhupada immediately challenged him with a question without giving answer. He said, what do you want to become? You want to become God or you want to become servant of God? He asked him. And then Giriraj Swami was shocked. How Prabhupada knows my heart? Because in his room there was a big board, I am God, he had written. Big poster. And then Prabhupada didn't wait for his answer. He went on proceeding. He said, if you want to serve God, then there is a creeper of devotion in your heart. God can give you the seed, you can grow the creeper, and he will give you sunlight and rain and everything. You can grow that, and then one day it will produce the fruit of love of God. But if you want to become God, then why should God encourage such competition? He said, the meaning of not encouraging such competition means he will never let you become God, don't worry. Because God is God, He will keep you where you are. You know? So Prabhupada would challenge like this, when people came. Like one boy suddenly got up in the middle of a class and said, "I am God," he said. And then Prabhupada challenged him. "Okay, we can check whether you are God. All the audience here, everybody can check. God is one who has six opulences in full. Are you the most beautiful?" And all the people around were laughing. Then he asked, "Are you the most intelligent? Are you the most strong?" As Prabhupada asked one by one, the fellow sat down. So Prabhupada, actually, instead of removing him from the audience, he removed the audience from him. And then audience saw for themselves that he became a laughing stock. Yeah, Prabhupada thoroughly presented the philosophy. Prabhupada could never tolerate people. In Bombay, there was a Bhagavad Week program going on. Prabhupada wanted to know, what is this Bhagavad Week? And he saw they are speaking from Bhagavatam, but they were Mayavadis. And then Prabhupada came to know that they are telling the people that, "We are very sorry to inform you that, you know, Krishna did the Rasalila dance. But in our, we hope and feel that there was no mistake on the part of Krishna. That was only a small pastime, but otherwise he did many other good things." So they were sort of apologetic about Krishna's rasa dance. Prabhupada wrote a letter to them saying that those people who are ignoramus, those who have no knowledge of the nature of the Lord, they should not take lead in foolishly becoming apologetic for the Lord's pastimes. Because they are foolish, they themselves don't know what Krishna is. And then Prabhupada told them, "I came to know about your Bhagavad Week, but I decided not to attend it. And I also told 1,000 people never to go for your program." He said, "This kind of nonsense program, which your people are bluffing in this." And then Prabhupada wrote back, said, "If you don't stop this program at once, I'll call the police." Of course, the police was never called and the program went on. And those who have to get cheated got cheated also. So the idea is, Prabhupada confronted all kinds of bogus religionists. And in the name of, here also, when you see Hiranyakashipu, he may appear like a very religious person in the previous chapter, if you see. But the so-called religious person proves himself to be a number one atheist. Like these Arya Samajis, they behave like religious people, but they will not bow down to God and they come in front of the deities. So, in this way, there are so many people. So, Madhyamadhikari should actually not tolerate such kind of people at all. Either he keeps a long distance from them or he defeats them. So in that connection, this chapter is meaningful, and to read about what Hiranyakashipu is telling all his actually, even if a student does not develop aversion for materialism, and if he does not develop ardent desire to advance in spirituality, then he will be a spineless practitioner. He may be simply thinking, "I am a devotee," but he will not be serious about his devotional practice. One should, of course, one may sensitively present to the materialist how materialism is bogus, but one should have a great deep conviction that the materialism, the materialistic civilization, is a horrible civilization. One should never be secretly impressed by it. If one is impressed, then one is in the same path of degradation as them. Like Prabhupada went to America, he saw in the night, along with some disciples, when he was passing by, you know, shining lamps, colorful lamps, jik-jak, 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 everywhere, full of lamps and everything. And the disciples were seeing, and they, amongst themselves, they were talking, "So much Maya, Maya is so powerful." And there were tears coming in Prabhupada's eyes, you know, down his cheeks. And then Prabhupada said, "Just see how they are royally getting cheated by Maya," he said. And then he said, "How much energy they are wasting in this human form of life to simply get sold out to Maya and get repeated kicks from her," he said. So from Prabhupada we can learn what is right perception. So we have to be convinced about the horrible nature of materialistic civilization. So So that we read in this section, the second section. And then as you proceed further, then you read about Hiranyakashipu's austerities. That is another full chapter. That is another section. Where you understand the demons, it's not that the demons want sense gratification, so they have no power to do austerity. No. Demons are far more powerful than devotees in performing austerities. That is told by Narada Muni himself. Yatha vairanu bandena, there is one verse which he says about Shishupal. He says, when the demons decide to do something, their determination even exceeds devotees, he says. He says, when they are focused on getting sense gratification, like you might have seen some boys studying for competitive exams, how they study. Our devotees cannot compete with them. It's not possible. When they plan to do something, so Hiranyakashipu performs this tadasan, severe penance, and that's very vividly described to explain how to achieve the immortal, supreme position in the whole universe. Hiranyakashipu worked very hard. I think Darshan is going to open, I think. Yeah, so let us take Darshan of Sri Radha Govinda Dev, then we will continue after that.
Radha Govinda, Radha Govinda. Radha Govinda, Radha Govinda, Radhe. Jaya Jagannath, Jaya Jagannath, Jaya Baladeva, Jaya Subhadra. Jaya Jagannath, Jaya Jagannath, Jaya Jagannath, Jaya Jagannath, Jaya Baladeva, Jaya Subhadra. Gaurangnetai, 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 Sri Sri Gaurangnetai. Ugram Viram Mahavishnu. Jvalantam sarvato mukham Narsimham bhishanam bhadram Mrityor mrityor namamyaham Shri Narasimha Jaya Narasimha Jaya Jaya Narasimha Prahladesha Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Bhringa Tava Kara Kamala Varena Ta Adbhuta Shringa Dalita Hiranyakashipu Kanu Vinga Kesavadrita Narahari Rupa Jaya Jagadish Hare Jaya Jagadish Hare Jaya Jagadish Hare Dalita Hiranyakashipu Kanu Vinga ನರಹರಿ ರೂಪ ಜಯ ಜಗದೀಶ ಹರೆ ಜಯ ಜಗದೀಶ ಹರೆ ಜಯ ಜಗದೀಶ ಹರೆ ನೃಸಿಂಹದೆ ಜಯ ನೃಸಿಂಹದೆ ಜಯ ಲಕ್ಷ್ಮೀ ನರಸಿಂಹ ಲಕ್ಷ್ಮೀ ನರಸಿಂಹ ಜಯ ಲಕ್ಷ್ಮೀ ನರಸಿಂಹ ಜಯ ಪ್ರಹ್ಲಾದ್ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಪ್ರಹ್ಲಾದ್ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಜಯ ಪ್ರಹ್ಲಾದ್ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಜಯ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಸಿಂಹದೇವ ಭಗವಾನ್ ಕಿ ಭಕ್ತರಾಜ ಪ್ರಹ್ಲಾದ್ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಕಿ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಕಿ
ಸೊ ಐ ವಾಸ್ ಟೆಲಿಂಗ್ ಯು ದಟ್ ಇನ್ ಅವರ್ ಕಂಡೀಷನ್ ಸ್ಟೇಜ್ ವಿ ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ಅ ಟೆಂಡೆನ್ಸಿ ಟು ಬಿಕಮ್ ಇಂಪ್ರೆಸ್ಡ್ ಬೈ ಮೆಟೀರಿಯಲ್ ಅಡ್ವಾನ್ಸ್ಮೆಂಟ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಇಟ್ ಇಸ್ ವೆರಿ ಈಸಿ ಟು ಅಬ್ಸರ್ವ್ ದಿಸ್ Srila Prabhupada was never impressed by the material advancement of the Western people. And he was very frank about it when he went to the West also. So, Hiranyakashipu is an example of a hardcore materialist who is very advanced in material life. And was no substance of devotion. Far from devotion, he is an atheist, die-hard atheist, who is even making a plot to kill Vishnu. So we will read that section today and make a comparison with the atheistic life versus Hiranyakashipu's life. We will see a lot of similarities. So this is one section. As we proceed further, there is another section where Hiranyakashipu terrorizes the universe. That is actually, we can say, is a practical demonstration of what he was talking to his demoniac associates before. He himself is terrorizing the universe and how he is exploiting the world. You will see that. That chapter is connected to this. And then subsequently we have a beautiful chapter on Prahlada's qualities. So if time permits, I will discuss briefly on that, Prahlada's qualities also. Prahlada's qualities is a very heart-touching chapter. You see, the Srimad Bhagavatam is so wonderful. It shows a very clear contrast between the demoniac quality and divine quality. The extreme demon and extreme devotee. Fully surrendered devotee and die-hard atheist. Two extremes. You get to hear about both. So Bhagavatam gives us a chance to see the extremities and then understand it in our own life and develop qualities of devotees. So, the other later section which comes, where Hiranyakashipu tortures Prahlad and subsequently when he makes an effort to kill him, then Lord Narasimha appears. So that small section, small part of it, I will do it in the evening lecture. So Acharyananda Prabhu will do what Prahlad taught, Prahlada's prayers. the Lord Narasimhadev. There are about 55 verses, I think, 50 verses there. Very nice section. Prayers offered by Prahlad. Actually, before Prahlad offered, prayers, there are also prayers by various devatas. And it's very, you can make a very beautiful contrast between the two. The prayers made by demigods is all pertinent to their own department only. For example, if all of us were to meet Prabhupada, for example, I talk about only youth preaching, somebody talks only about congregation, somebody talks only about IT department, somebody talks about kitchen, somebody talks about life member department. Similarly, all the demigods you find, they're offering prayers. Indra says, thank you, my dear Lord, you have killed this Hiranyakashipu, now I will get my share of my sacrifice regularly, thank you. Like that Indra is saying. And all the sages are saying, till now we could not open our mouth and chant any mantras. Now that Hiranyakashipu is killed, the demon is gone, now we can chant our mantras peacefully. And the tapasvis are saying, now we can do our tapasya peacefully. Everybody is talking about their own activities. But Prahlad Maharaj, being a pure devotee, he is presenting the pure devotional service in his prayers. That our Acharyanpu will touch on that. So, in this way, there are so many sections. Lord Narasimhadev speaking to Prahlad, and Prahlad speaking back to him. Very nice section it is. And Prahlad offers prayers, and then Lord Narasimha is eager to give him some benediction. And then Lord is asking him, and Prahlad is replying back. Actually, those sections, devotees should read very carefully, personally, underline, note, and assimilate some of them, because that is actually what is expected of us as we progress in spiritual life. So I was telling you, in your temple, every year you do, you can be progressive. You begin from the beginning and then gradually you cover some one or two sections. The next year you cover the next two sections. In this way you can proceed. There may be probably 40, 50 sections you can dig out from this gold mine of Bhagavatam. So many nice sections are there. Sometimes there may be one verse and you will need 2-3 hours to discuss it. Like for example, in Vamandev section, there is from Vindhyavali, Vamandev's, Bali Maharaj's wife, she is speaking one verse only. You will need to discuss for hours on that. It's a beautiful verse, it's full of meaning. Similarly, Vamandev speaks 2-3 verses. They are so important. In fact, they carry the deepest principles about simplicity. So, in that way, here also you will find some verses. Like Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam, that verse Prabhupada has given some probably 8-10 page purport. Sometimes 10 or 12 pages he has given, because it's such an important verse. For each item he has elaborated in one page or something like that. So, that is another way you can read the Bhagavatam. You can just take one verse and very nice purport and just spend 2-3 hours discussing on that. So, which goes to show that Srimad Bhagavatam has enormous potential to enlighten us and elevate us, purify us of our wrong conceptions, and ultimately bestow devotion in our hearts. So recite this verse. 7-12. So the goal of study of Bhagavatam is ultimately to awaken attraction for Krishna. Not only this Bhagavatam is voluminous, Prabhupada gave 18 big volumes and 45 volumes like this. So if you have the small volume, wherever you go, travel in the train, just carry one volume and finish it off, little by little. Personal reading. And then later on you can read in the assembly of devotees. Then we will get a nice understanding. Let's recite this verse.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudiraye నష్టప్రాయేష్వభద్రేషు నిత్యం భాగవత సేవయా భగవత్యుత్తమ శ్లోకే భక్తిర్భవతి నైష్ఠికీ కృష్ణాయ వాసుదేవాయ దేవకీ నందనాయ చ నందగోపకుమారాయ గోవిందాయ నమో నమః.
యత్ర యత్ర ద్విజాగావో వేదావర్ణాశ్రమక్రియాః తం తం జనపదం యాత సందీపయత వృశ్చత. యత్ర యత్ర ద్విజాగావో వేదావర్ణాశ్రమక్రియాః తం తం జనపదం యాత సందీపయత వృశ్చత. యత్ర యత్ర ద్విజాగావో వేదావర్ణాశ్రమక్రియాః తం తం జనపదం యాత సందీపయత వృశ్చత. Yatra yatra, wherever, Dvijaha, the Brahmanas, Gavaha, the protected cows, Vedaha, the Vedic culture, Varnashrama, of the Aryan civilization of four Varnas and four Ashramas, Kriyaha, the activities, Tam tam, that, Janapadam, to the city or town, యాత గో సందీపయత సెట్ ఫైర్ వృశ్చత కట్ డౌన్ ఆల్ ద ట్రీస్. ద ట్రాన్స్లేషన్ పర్పట్ బై హిస్ డివైన్ గ్రేస్ ఇస్ భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామి ప్రభుపాద్ శిల్ ప్రభుపాద్కి ఇమీడియట్లీ గో వేర్ ఎవర్ దర్ ఇస్ గుడ్ ప్రొటెక్షన్ ఫర్ ద కౌస్ అండ్ బ్రాహ్మణస్ అండ్ వేర్ ఎవర్ ద వేదాస్ ఆర్ స్టడీడ్ ఇన్ టర్మ్స్ ఆఫ్ ద వర్ణాశ్రమ ప్రిన్సిపల్స్ సెట్ ఫైర్ టు దోస్ ప్లేసెస్ అండ్ కట్ ఫ్రమ్ ద రూట్స్ ద ట్రీస్ దేర్ which are the source of life. Purport. The picture of proper human civilization is indirectly described here. In a perfect human civilization, there must be a class of men fully trained as perfect brahmanas. Similarly, there must be kshatriyas to rule the country very nicely, according to the injunctions of the shastras. And there must be vaishyas who can protect the cows. The word gava indicates that cows should be given protection. Because the Vedic civilization is lost, cows are not protected, but instead indiscriminately killed in slaughterhouses. Such are the acts of demons. Therefore, this is a demoniac civilization. The Varnashrama Dharma mentioned here is essential for human civilization. Unless there is a Brahmana to guide, a Kshatriya to rule perfectly, and a perfect Vaishya to produce food and protect the cows, how will people live peacefully? It is impossible. Another point is that trees also should be given protection. During its lifetime, a tree should not be cut for industrial enterprises. In Kali Yuga, the trees are indiscriminately and unnecessarily cut for industry, in particular for paper mills that manufacture a profuse quantity of paper for the publication of demoniac propaganda, nonsensical literature, huge quantities of newspapers and many other paper products. This is a sign of a demoniac civilization. The cutting of trees is prohibited unless necessary for the service of Lord Vishnu. Yajñārthāt karmaṇām yatra lokoyam karma bandhanah. Work done as a sacrifice for Lord Vishnu must be performed. Otherwise, work binds one to the material world. But if the paper mills stop producing paper, one may argue, how can our ISKCON literature be published? The answer is that the paper mills should manufacture paper only for the publication of ISKCON literature. Because ISKCON literature is published for the service of Lord Vishnu. This literature clarifies our relationship with Lord Vishnu. And therefore, the publication of ISKCON literature is the performance of yajna. Yajna arthat karmanam yatra lokoyam karma bandhanah. Yajna must be performed as indicated by the superior authorities. The cutting of trees simply to manufacture paper for the publication of unwanted literature is the greatest sinful act. Yeah. So here, in this particular, I'm just going to make some qualitative comments, small comments, and go fast. Otherwise, there are plenty of verses in this series. You see, in India, there is a place called Bhuj in Gujarat. You know, generally Gujarat is considered a pious zone. There are many Krishna devotees there. You know, people worship Laddu Gopal and all that. But this Bhuj, many people are not aware, is a place of huge slaughterhouse of cows at one time. So this, because of the slaughterhouse, one scientist has come up with a theory called as BIS theory, B-I-S. So this BIS theory is based on EPW, Einstein Pain Wave Theory. EPW theory, they call it. So Einstein originally had given a clue which was later developed by this BIS theory, which appeared in the newspaper. So what this theory says, that Einstein pain wave theory means when the animals are slaughtered, they give out a scream which makes the earth's crust very vulnerable and weak for earthquakes to happen. That was Einstein's theory. And BIS later on substantiated it with many examples. They found wherever they have slaughterhouses, they also have problem of earthquakes. And he has shown in the global map many places where are the slaughterhouses and how very close to that there is earthquake. So there's a connection between the two. So, and earthquake swallows many houses, many people, people die by that. So this connection can be shown. In the same manner, when the animals are slaughtered in mass quantities, that also leads to great wars, like the World War I, World War II, the Vietnam War, the Roman War, the French War, isn't it? All these different wars you are coming across. And where there's a, Prabhupada says these big wars, they are actually display of the ghastly material energy, Durga Devi, Bhadrakali. It is her display, these wars, where blood flows like a river. Soldiers kill each other in large quantities. And how such wars happen, sometimes a teacher in a classroom finds two students are doing mischievous activities. She calls both of them and tells them, you catch his ears, and you catch his ears, and both the guys stand up, sit down. And they're doing it 100 times or so, like that. Similarly, the material nature, Durga, what she does, when people are maintaining organized slaughterhouses to kill millions of cows, even from Bengal also, I heard that 50,000 cows are slaughtered every day. So when they do like that, then these wars happen, where all the souls who are instrumental in such mass killing, they are killed also, slaughtered on a large scale. Because there has to be a balance, no? The balance of karma. Somebody has done so much bad karma, then that has to be compensated subsequently. Because the killers of the animals, the transporters, you know, the cookers, those who cooks, the cooks, then those who serve, those who eat, they all have to get their share. And they are all taken to the battlefield and slaughtered wholesale, like that. So, in this way, Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport very beautifully, the connection between, Prabhupada says in one purport, even if Hare Krishna devotees can preach and make 10% of the world population to follow the four regulative principles, Prabhupada says the whole world will be like Vaikuntha, he says. People can live peacefully. 10% of the world population. I have one in Pune, one Mr. Malhotra. Last 40 years, he is a president of Rotary Club. Not the president all the while, but he has been working with Rotary Club. But he has taken the presidentship quite often, many times. And very ardent worker of Rotary Club. So I asked him, if you want, you can take me to Rotary Club. I can speak also about promoting non-vegetarianism and eating Krishna Prasad. So I will give a lecture at the end of which we can talk. He said, Rajasham, before you could tell me this, I have already tried it, he said. He said, 99% of the world population is meat eaters. He said, these people are not willing to promote this idea. They don't want to force your selling. Which means, even 10% of the population of the world is not willing to wholeheartedly follow this. So, the idea is not, killing of animals or not. The idea is killing of a cow. The cow is actually a very sacred animal. The milk of the cow, it is said the cow absorbs the sunlight and transforms it into great medicinal milk in her body. And the milk is useful for the brahmanas for nourishing their brain tissues to understand the shastra. And the ghee is useful for performance of the sacrifice, isn't it? And the gober is so medicinal. It can cure all the ailments of the body which are incurable otherwise by allopathic medicines also. And the cow is the most harmless yet most worshipable animal. So here you find cow is actually counted as one of the seven mothers. So you find here Hiranyakashipu is calling his assistants, all of them, beginning from the Tasmin kute hite nashte kritamule vanaspatau vitapa yivashushyanti Vishnu prana divau kasaha. He's telling, when the root of the tree is cut, then the tree falls down. Then naturally, branches, twigs, everything will dry. Similarly, when I am now preparing myself to kill Lord Vishnu, he is saying. So when Vishnu is killed, then all the demigods and other brahmanas and cows, calves, everybody, they will all perish. Because when Vishnu is finished, they will all be finished. In this way, I can have an unrivaled kingdom, he is saying. Like that. And then he is saying, while I am engaged in the business of killing Vishnu, go down to the planet Earth, which is flourishing due to Brahminical culture and a Kshatriya government. These people engage in austerity, sacrifice, Vedic study, regulative vows, and charity. Destroy all the people thus engaged, he is saying. And then Prabhupada writes in the purport, Hiranyakashipu's main purpose was to disturb the demigods. He planned first to kill Lord Vishnu, so the demigods would automatically weaken and die. Another of his plans was to disturb the residents of the planet Earth. The peace and prosperity of Earth and other planets were maintained by Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. So, that's why he's telling. So basically, his goal is what? Two things he's saying. To kill Lord Vishnu along with the demigods. And when they are all finished off, then another business is go to planet Earth and stop the Brahminical culture. Like he's saying here. Prabhupada is saying here. See this fellow. Vishnu Dvijakriya Moolo Yajno Dharma Maya Puman Devarshi Pitrabhutana Dharmasya Cha Parayanam. The basic principle of Brahminical culture is to satisfy Lord Vishnu. Because he is the personification of sacrificial and ritualistic ceremonies. Lord Vishnu is personified reservoir of religious principles and he is a shelter of demigods, the great pitas and people in general. When the Brahmanas are killed, no one will exist to encourage the Kshatriyas to perform yajnas. And thus the demigods will not being appeased by yajna will automatically die, he is saying. So the purport is saying here about the Brahminical culture. What is Brahminical culture? Many things. One aspect of Brahminical culture is the Brahmanas study the Vedas and they follow the Vedas. They follow the four regulative principles. They lead a clean life. They also protect the cows. And they are actually well-wishers of the whole humanity. In fact, they live on charity, which means they accept little charity. They live in a small place and they are satisfied with very little. But although they may be very simple, they are the one who give the guidance for the Kshatriyas to perform yajna. In fact, I read once when Vishwamitra went to meet Vasishtha, Vishwamitra demanded the Kamadhenukav, you know. That time Vasishtha refused to give. Vasishtha said Kamadhenukav is so vital for the Brahmana service. But Vishwamitra said, if you don't give me, I will snatch it and take it away. That time, Vasishtha, of course, he said, yes, if you can take it. But then he performed a yajna. And the yajna was so powerful that Kamadhenu, she could bring out so many warriors from her mouth and different parts of the body that they all defeated Vishwamitra along with all his army very easily. So, that time Vishwamitra got a realization that a Kshatriya is like a lion and a Brahmana is like a squirrel. A squirrel may be small in size, but it can go to the topmost small twig of a tree. Whereas a lion may be very huge in size, but it cannot climb up the tree. Similarly, Brahmanas have different kind of prowess. They have the prowess arising from the asceticism and they are following the regulative vows of the scriptures. So they are empowered by God. So his Kshatriya Tejas was subdued by the Brahma Tejas of Vasishtha. And that's what inspired him to become make an effort to become a Brahmana later, Brahma Rishi and all that. So Hiranyakashipu also knew that the Brahmanas gradually become very, very powerful because of their simplicity, their devotion to Vishnu, their performance of Vedic sacrifices, study of the Shastra, following regulative vows and austerities, and asceticism. So these Brahmanas, you know, although they appear very tiny, they are controlling the whole world by guiding the Kshatriyas to perform yajna. So he wanted to, first thing he wanted to do was to kill the Brahmanas. So as we proceed studying this, we will also draw a comparison with the modern day civilization. You will see in the last few decades, the Brahmanas in India are not encouraged to study the Vedic literature, especially the Bhagavad Gita and the chanting of the four Vedas. You find sometimes when you go to Tirupati Balaji temple or in Ranganath temple, some Brahmana boys sitting and chanting, you find very few. But there is no encouragement by the government for this. In fact, chanting the Vedic mantras is considered a lowly profession. It's meant for some poor Brahmana boys who, you know, who do some puja pat and earn their livelihood for their belly. Now all the Brahmana children, they are all going to become engineers and doctors and not getting much support in India. They are leaving India and there's a brain drain. They are all flying to the West and they take green card and they settle in America. Last time I went to US, I found all the cream brilliance of India is going to the West. If somebody is staying back, he only can be Hare Krishna who is staying back, I think, from IITs and NITs generally. Otherwise, the top people, they all go there. And what happens when the Hindu boys go there? They start eating beef. The mother cow whom they are supposed to worship, they start eating it there. And they become hardcore materialists like mini Hiranyakashipus. They become like that. So Brahmanas become Brahma Rakshasas when they go to the West. Because they engage in all kinds of dirty culture of multiple partners. In fact, their children and their grandchildren, they don't even know who is Ram, who is Krishna. They don't know. Far from knowing about the other holy places in India. Although they are born in Brahmana families. They become degraded totally like this. So, modern civilization is also a reincarnation of Hiranyakashipu. Because you find whatever Hiranyakashipu wanted to do, the modern educationists are also doing the same thing. So instead of, Prabhupada says, those coming in Brahmana families have a certain type of intelligence that comes in the family itself, lineage. You know? And it could be positively used in study of Shastra and propagation of Shastra. Or it could be used for studying Jadavidya and propagation of Jadavidya. Now all the Brahminical intelligence is utilized where? For studying Jadavidya only. Dead matter, that's all. That's what Hiranyakashipu wanted. Hiranyakashipu did not want them to study the Vedic literature and become enlightened. And he didn't want them to inspire the Kshatriyas to organize Yajna and all. Because once you do Yajna, the demigods will become nourished. And they will be overpowering the demons, which he didn't want, like he says here. So one aspect of Brahminical culture is to protect cows, study of the Vedas, living a pure life, and all the principles of proper community and society, like treating women like a mother, and offering protection to five weaklings, children, old people, women, and cows and brahmanas, all should be protected, elders should be respected, and the society should be divided according to the varna and ashrama. Brahmachari grihastha vanaprasthane, brahmacharis live with the guru in the gurukula. Listen, sannyasis travel around and preach, isn't it? And the vanaprasthas, they also become gurus, guru and guru patini. They give shelter to small children to train them as brahmacharis. And the grihasthas, they live their life. Similarly, there are vaishyas who are supplying to the whole society, everything. So the principles of the Varnashrama were nicely followed, and this fellow wanted to destroy that completely. Now modern day man also says, oh, we don't want casteism. We don't want this caste, and we want to make unisex. Now you go to MBA colleges, they put boys, girls, everybody in the same hostel. They are saying, let everybody, we don't see any difference between man and woman. So wholesale degradation. So his main purpose of destroying Brahminical culture, his main purpose is what? He didn't want Vishnu to be the center. He wanted who to be the center? Himself to be the center. That was his desire. Why should the pious people go to heaven? He said, let pious people be sent to hell. And all my rogues and rascals who are my associates, we will all go to heaven along with me. That was his plan. So when he told all these things, so he's saying, this was he's saying, immediately go wherever there is good production of cows and brahmanas and the Vedas are studied in terms of Varnashrama. Set fire to those places, he says, and cut from the roots the trees there, which are sources of life. And after that, what happened? Iti te bhartra nirdesham adaya shirasadritaha. Shirasadrita means taking Hiranyakashipu's instruction on their heads, the demons very happily went to perform disastrous activities. Sometimes some political activist is sending some of his gundas to beat up the other fellow. Like that, these demons, they became very happy because they like sometimes the people see a horror movie where the aeroplane is crushed to powder. What a wonderful scene, they say. Because some demoniac people, they like disastrous activities. That's why in the horror movies, they destroy and show you. How do you like this destruction? They say, very nice. So the demons were very fond of destruction. So the demons being fond of disaster activities took Hiranyakashipu instructions on their heads and with great respect offered him obeisances. According to his directions, they engaged in envious activities directed against all living beings. And then the demons set fire to the cities, villages, pasturing grounds, cow pens, gardens, agricultural fields, natural forests. They burned hermitages of saintly people, the important mines that produced valuable metals, the residential quarters of the agriculturalists, the mountain villages and villages of cow protectors, covered men. They also burned the government capitals. Some of the demons took digging instruments and broke down the bridges, the protective walls, gates, gopurams. They took axes and began cutting important trees that produced mango, jackfruit and other. See, there are some pious trees, like the mango trees, jackfruit trees and all that. So they were cutting down those trees. And there were other trees like babul trees which give no fruit. They let them stay. Which are thorn producing trees. Basically their whole idea was two things. Create terrible disturbance for all the living beings on earth. And don't let them follow any religious principles. Make the whole world a secular place. And so that nobody will be able to worship God. And anywhere anybody want to teach about God, put a stop, full stop to them. So that then what can happen? Like for example, one lady, she took the cow slaughter videos. She actually secretly entered into all the slaughterhouses and took video. The PETA, Protection for Ethical Treatment of Animals. So she did that, but then she produced a CD and made in thousands and started distributing. Somehow the demons, they found out. Who is this lady who did it? She got a life threat. They told her, take the CD back, and if we find you distributing the CD again, we'll murder you. Because that shows the ghastly features of a slaughterhouse. Similarly, Prabhupada said, if only the Americans knew why I have gone to America, they would have killed me. Prabhupada said that. Because by Prabhupada going there, many people turned away from non-vegetarianism. They stopped smoking cigarettes and all that. So many of the cigarette and other liquor industries, they give a big bribe to the health inspectors. So that they can continue their nonsense business on and on. For example, this Marlboro and all these cigarettes. When students are very young in the college, early days they introduce by giving free cigarettes. So by smoking, you get into the habit, and then you'll have to pay the price to buy it regularly. And they advertise regularly in TV. You will see a very young boy looking very handsome, takes a cigarette and he smokes. Like that big circles of smoke come, isn't it? And then they put a statutory warning which is glowing, cigarette smoking is injurious to health or whatever. And then after that it disappears. Then the young boy says, who cares? Who cares? Whether he smiles, So that's the last keyword the people take. What they take? Who cares? Which means no problem, you can smoke. So in this way, this is the life of demons. They propagate these kind of things. So their goal is to create a great disturbance in the human society, which they delight very much, you see. Because, see, the demons have a certain culture and devotees and demigods have different culture. So now Hiranyakashipu wants to propagate whose culture? The demoniac culture. Eat, drink, smoke, have illicit connection with anybody you want. So in this way, our Govindpu was telling, even Ravana and Vali, they were talking about swapping each other's wife also and enjoying. So this kind of thing the demons would do, even in Vedic times. Vedic times, Vedic culture was there, but the demonic culture was also parallel there that time. So in this way, Hiranyakashipu thought, why should Brahminical culture be encouraged, destroyed? Like he's saying, cut down all the pious trees. Like somebody brought me these grapes. If you see, these grapes are so whitish. Why they are whitish? Because nowadays the grapes has only water inside. It has no juice. Because they artificially put so many things. What you see, the white is the saccharin, which is a phosphate bath they give. So outside you have saccharin and inside you have water. That's all. And you eat the grapes, what gives you taste is what? The saccharin outside. And then when you bite the grapes, the water will mix with the saccharin and you can drink it. So you think you are eating grapes, you are only, eating saccharin plus ordinary water. Grapes has no juice nowadays. So you find in the name of biotechnology, you find that so many alterations are being done by tampering with nature, if you see. Now you see nowadays apples, very bright red pigment apples. You've seen that? They look very attractive. You bite and eat them, they are like saw powder. No taste inside. And another apple is little yellow and little green mixed. Looks very, very simple. You bite that, that's real apple. That's real apple, you'll find that. Because demons means they tamper with even the very basic necessities. You see, one scientist said, you know, just see the modern day advancement, you know, we can swim underwater like a fish in our submarines. We can fly in the sky like a bird in an aeroplane, he said. So another man, you know what he said? Only you cannot walk like a human being on the road, he said peacefully. Because anywhere you walk, there is pollution everywhere. There's so much pollution. You can't drink water anywhere. It's very dangerous nowadays. So they tamper with the basic necessities that are provided by God. They tamper with that. Like, for example, grapes, oranges, chikus, mangoes, these are all basic needs God has given. They tamper even with that. Like you see, Hiranyakashipu is telling, destroy them. Let people not have anything to eat. Or now modern days, they destroy in a different way. How? By going for hybrid and by artificially, you know, ripening the... Like you see, a banana is looking yellow. But when you eat inside, it is like a raw thing. Because they put smoke to make it ripe like that. So in this way, you find the demon's main goal is to destroy Brahminical culture. Thus disturbed again and again by unnatural occurrences caused by the followers of Hiranyakashipu, all the people had to cease the activities of Vedic culture, not receiving the results of yajna. The demigods also became disturbed. The demigods left their residential quarters in the heavenly planets and unobserved by the demons, began wandering on the planet Earth to see the disasters. So the demigods are wondering why yajnas are stopped. And they came to Earth to see how Hiranyakashipu has created so much disturbance. In fact, you will find the characteristic of a demon is very typical. Kamsa's time also, the Brahmanas had to keep their mouth shut. They could not chant the Vedic mantras. When Krishna was born, on that day there were loud Vedic mantras chanted. And they reverberated in the sky because the Brahmanas lost fear of Kamsa on the day when Krishna appeared. Because Krishna comes to establish the Brahminical culture again, Vedic culture again. So here also you find the Brahminical culture was broken down and the whole world was made a very atrocious place. Hiranyakashipu culture was established. Today you see in Indian schools the morning prayers are being stopped in most of the schools. They say, what is the need of gathering in the morning? There is no need. The children directly go to the classes. There are no prayers in the morning. So, when there are no prayers to God in the morning, submission to God, now what do you expect the children to become? And in moral science period, they send the children to play. Is it not true? And what they teach the children, you know, your ancestors are monkeys or apes. They teach this kind of, and you can also be like a monkey. You can be doing activities like a monkey. That's what they are promoting. So, you will find Hiranyakashipu wanted Shanda and Amaraka to teach politics and economics in their ashram. That's what modern man is simply... In fact, today's education control is in the hands of economic lords, the commercial people. They have taken the whole control. So they are training the children in schools. Money, 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 money is honey. This is the propaganda in the schools, everywhere. That is, you can find that everywhere. Children are taught... Actually, children are not taught, children are programmed to think that you have to... Somebody does chemical engineering and joins a software company. What do you do in a software company after chemical engineering? Do you put some chemical into the computer? Why? And everybody knows why a chemical engineer goes to a software company. Money is honey. And see that. So, then what is the use of your study? So, what you study, that is not of any consequence at all. Money making is the only business. Make money, fill up your belly and enjoy your senses and kick everybody away and be happy yourself. This demoniac culture is being promoted nowadays. That is Hiranyakashipu civilization. See, this is one section where Hiranyakashipu told all these things. Now, after this, what follows is Hiranyakashipu is now preaching to the mother and the sister-in-law and all of them the about knowledge of the soul. That's a very elaborate section. It's a huge chapter it is. And then the Hiranyakashipu's plan to become immortal That's a chapter very elaborately explains about the Tadasana performed by Hiranyakashipu. To cut the long story short, exactly if you hear about Hiranyakashipu, you will know this fellow performed such a severe penance standing in the asana of lifting his two hands up. It is said all the flesh in his body was eaten up by the ants and all kinds of crickets and other creatures. They were eating it up. In fact, only the bones were left, and his life air was somehow moving along the bones and surviving. And a big anthill had developed over his body. It was a thick jungle. And this fellow was with closed eyes, with full concentration. Om Brahmadevaya Namaha. Om Brahmadevaya Namaha. Like that he was chanting. Chanting, propitiating Brahma. And this was going on and on for many, many long years. In fact, when all the demigods, they went to Lord Brahma and they offered a prayer. So in that prayer they told Brahma, my dear Lord Brahma, this fellow Hiranyakashipu is trying to usurp your position. We know that you are the top person in the whole universe and you are interested in protecting cows and keeping the Vedic culture. But now Hiranyakashipu has decided that he will take on your position and he will destroy the Vedic culture. And he will spread the Rakshasa culture all over the universe. So please do something, do the needful. And we all are very disturbed. In fact, the demigod said, there is a big heat that is emanating from his head, which is affecting even our lokas, our planets also. All over the top planets are getting affected by his heat. You see, we can draw a parallel between Hiranyakashipu's severe penance and Dhruma Raja's severe penance. There are some similarities, there are some differences. Now, one similarity is Hiranyakashipu was doing penance and the whole upper lokas were getting heated up. Now, Dhruma Raja was doing penance, there was no air in the universe to breathe because he was standing on one toe, applying big pressure on earth, and he was controlling the air so strongly that there was no air in the universe, and all the demigods were suffocating also. And they went and reported to Lord Vishnu. That is one similarity. And Dhruva's tapasya is also very vigorous, very serious, like that of Hiranyakashipu. Because, he gradually ate only shak, and then once in 6 days he was drinking water, and once in 12 days only taking a puff of air. Gradually he gave up taking in air also. Very severe penance he did, Dhruva Maharaj. Actually, sometimes people ask whether such things are possible. You all must have read that Prahlad Jani's article in BTG, isn't it? They personally went and interviewed him. This fellow doesn't eat or drink at all, practically for the last 70 years. So how Dhruva Maharaj could do for 6 months, The one difference between Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad Jani is Prahlad Jani did not do it for Vishnu's pleasure. If he did, he would have got Vishnu very easily. Whereas Dhruva Maharaj aimed at Vishnu. So, when you see Prahlad Jani, you can get an idea. Somebody can survive without drinking water, without eating food, without passing stool, without passing urine, remain like that for 60-70 years. Even in Kali Yuga, man is remaining like that as a yogi. Which means yogis could do such things. So, Dhruva Maharaj did severe penance, as did Hiranyakashipu also. That is also a similarity. Both of them did very severe penance. But the differences are more. What is the main difference in the penance performed by Dhruva and Hiranyakashipu? I was instructed by Narada, whereas Hiranyakashipu performed severe penances on his own. It's all in tamaguna, this kind of penances. Dhruva Maharaj wanted to please Lord Vishnu and get a benediction. He said, my dear Narada, I want to follow an honest path to achieve an impossible goal. Like that he said. Whereas Hiranyakashipu wanted to achieve an impossible goal by a crooked path. He's cheating Brahma also, isn't it? Telling Brahma, I should not die inside the palace, outside the palace, not in the sky, not in the land, not by an animal, not by a human being, not in the day, not in the night. Isn't it? So, in this way, he is indirectly tricking Brahma to bestow a benediction which Brahma otherwise cannot give. Yeah? So he wants a crooked method, whereas Dhruva wants a straightforward method. You can see that. And Hiranyakashipu wanted to kill Vishnu, whereas Dhruva Maharaj wanted to surrender to Vishnu. You see? The big difference. And actually both of them, another similarity is they both had a very ambitious goal. Hiranyakashipu wanted to be king of the whole universe, and Dhruva Maharaj wanted somewhat very similar. He said, I want a kingdom better than my grandfather also, better than Brahma's also. And he was given that. In fact, Lord Vishnu gave his own spiritual abode, which is called Dhruva Loka. And he allowed him to rule there for many long years. Which means, you know, even if one is ambitious, one should never turn against Vishnu. One should never become an atheist. By taking shelter of Vishnu, everything can be accomplished. Even desire to enjoy such a great sovereignty, that can be achieved. Like, you know, it's not that somebody having an enjoying mentality necessarily has to be an atheist. But if somebody with an enjoying mentality goes to Krishna, Krishna purifies that enjoying mentality completely. He purifies, cleanses the heart. So Dhruva Maharaj's heart got cleansed, purified. Whereas Hiranyakashipu's heart got purified or what? No, it remained impure. So after this penance, he gets benediction from Brahma. But the demigods cannot give you a benediction in such a way that your heart gets purified. In fact, one starts bringing out all obnoxious tendencies of enjoying mentality by receiving from demigods. You see. So in this way, Brahmaji is coming here, you see. As soon as he was sprinkled with water from Lord Brahma's water pot, Hiranyakashipu arose, endowed with a full body, with limbs so strong that they could bear the striking of a thunderbolt. With physical strength and bodily lustre resembling molten gold, he emerged from the anthill like a completely young man, just as fire springs from fuel wood. So like fire comes out of fuel. From the firewood comes fire. Like that, Hiranyakashipu came out of the anthill with a tenacious gold-like body. When Brahmaji sprinkled water. In fact, Brahma openly told all the demigods, including Bhrigu, none of them are capable of, you know, performing penance like this fellow. In fact, he didn't drink a drop of water for 100 celestial years. Not even a drop of water. He did very severe penance. So Brahma was very, very pleased. And he was willing to give him any benediction. So now, as you know, he got many, many benedictions from Brahma. And the subsequent chapter also, actually he glorifies Brahma so much as if he is God only. You'll find there are a dozen prayers there. This is another chapalusi, we say, no, flattering. Why you flatter somebody so that he can get a very big benediction? Sometimes what happens if you flatter somebody, you know, then they may end up sanctioning you something which they otherwise have no authority to sanction. Like one time in our Pune temple, some three, four big Swamijis had come. Stout fellows, tall and having long beard, long hair, you know, jata and everything, big mustache also. Their eyes looked a little bit cunning. So 3-4 of them, they met some devotees. They said, we are coming from Haridwar. Of course, they didn't speak English, they spoke in Hindi. They asked, is there aapke mandir ke adhyaksh kaun hai? Then some devotees foolishly, they showed my room. And directly these fellows came there. I generally tell devotees, nobody should be sent without proper verification. So they sent, I was sitting in the room, and suddenly these fellows barged in and they closed the door. They all sat down. And they told me, Swamiji, we are coming from very long distance. You know, aapke bhaktwa ne prasad diya, pet par prasad kaya, bahut santushta hain. Abhi hum jane wale hain. Abhi thoda donation de dijiye. Jo bhi aapke haath se 5,000 ho, 10,000 ho, jo bhi. Aap dena chahte hain, aap de sakte hain. Hum kuch demand nahin karenge. Aap apne aap kuch dena ho, do do. Whatever you want to give on your own, you give. And then they said, hum dikha sakte hain aapko, we can show you. Some people have given us 20,000, 50,000, 1 lakh also. Then I said, we cannot give any such donation. We are ourselves bhikaris. I myself a beggar. Then how can a beggar give to another beggar, huh? In charity. So I said, we have to, we are running a charitable organization. For sadhus like you, we only give prasad, nothing else, I said. Then they said, and then one of them in a very cunning way said, Swamiji, hame maalam hai, aap adhyaksha hain. Sare ye iskan puna ka chabi ka guchha aapke kamar mein hai. He said, hame maalam hai. You are the ultimate controller. Aap adhikrit vyakti hain, aapke paas hai sab shakti. Agar aap sochenge dena hai, to aapko kaun rok sakta hai. So, why they are speaking like this? To increase my false ego. Is it not true? So that I will give a big charity. I immediately took my phone and called up devotees. Come and take these fellows out. And some four big devotees came. Immediately. And these fellows are also very big, but they got frightened by seeing those big fellows. Literally, you had to catch them, throw them out after that. So, why I'm telling you, this fellow was doing something similar with Brahma. He told Brahma, you are the super soul in the heart of everybody. You know, you are the supreme controller. There is nobody equal to you or above you or something like that. Big things he is speaking here. And Brahma also starts thinking, oh, even I was not aware of my greatness till now. You know? And now Brahma is in tension also a little bit. Because Brahma is thinking, he is telling, darshanam nafalam mama. My dear Hiranyakashipu, you have come to me and performed such a severe penance for me. So don't think that your darshan of me will go in vain. Darshanam nafalam mama, like that is saying. Because hum bhi kuch hain. Hum bhi kuch kar sakte hain aapke liye. Aap chinta mastu, chinta mat karo. Aisa mat socho ki kisi chote mote aadmi ke liye tapasya kar li tumne. Hum bhi chote nahi hain. See, this is the mentality of demigod worshippers and demigods. They say, you know, tum, what is it? Tum se badkar kaun? Tumhare bhakton mein se humse badkar kaun? They say, tum bhi bade, hum bhi bade, hum dono bade. I say, I scratch your back, you scratch my back. So, like this fellow is demanding from Brahmaji. Brahmaji was a bit careless in nodding the head for all the boons that he asked. And then he said, I should not die inside the palace, outside the palace, this, that, so many things he asked. And Brahmaji gave him all of that. Then what this fellow does, you see, that's a very interesting chapter. See, Narada, so beautiful it is. Here, see, the chapter title is, Hiranyakashipu Terrorizes Universe. But in this chapter you will find Narada speaking. Beginning here. Narada Muni is saying, Lord Brahma was very much satisfied by Hiranyakashipu's austerities, which were difficult to perform. Therefore, when solicited for benedictions, he indeed granted them, although they were rarely to be achieved. Lord Brahma said, O Hiranyakashipu, these benedictions for which you asked are very difficult to obtain for most men. Nonetheless, O my son, I shall grant you them, although they are generally not available. Varan yadyapi durlabhan, he is saying, tatapi vitarami anga varan yadyapi durlabhan. Although these are very difficult to be given, I am still giving you, my dear son, although they are very durlabhan, he is saying. And then Lord Brahma glorified this fellow. Then it goes on. And after that, what happened? You see, you know, here comes. Hiranyakashipu became the conqueror of the entire universe. Indeed, the great demon conquered all the planets in three worlds, including planets of human beings, Gandharvas, Garudas, great serpents, Siddhas, Charanas, Vidyasaras, great saints, Yamraj, Manus, Yakshas, Rakshasas, Pishachas, and their masters, and masters of ghosts and bhutas. He defeated the rulers of all the other planets. Conquering the abodes of all, he seized their power and influence. See, what is the meaning of conquering? It's like taking out the tooth of a snake. If you take out the tooth of a snake, will anybody have any fear for the snake? Similarly, he overthrew them from their posts. Like they were holding positions and posts as the kings of different places. The first thing he did was he removed them from the post. And he removed their influence also over anyone else. See, sometimes even if one is removed from the post, still one may have some influence because of the people's goodwill for him. But if you put a person in the prison, then what will he do with his influence also? He cannot do anything. In this way, he took away their power and influence. In fact, he called, that will be coming now, eventually, he called the wetting agent, drying agent, heating agent. Who is the heating agent? Agni. And the wetting agent? Varuna. And the drying agent is Vayu. So he called Vayu, Varuna and Agni, all of them, and said, right now submit resignation letter, immediately. Quit your post. And they were asked, my dear king, if we give up our positions, then how will the activities go on? That I will do directly myself. You all give Rajanama and quit. So that's what he did. And because of that, what he could do, if the sun was too hot, he would look out of the window and look at the sun, twisting his eyebrows. Aye, what is this? He twist his mustache. Cool down. And immediately sun, he would withdraw. He didn't have to have air conditioner or something. Can you imagine? Is there anybody like that nowadays? See, that will come here subsequently. Lot of things. Being worshipped by sacrifices offered with great gifts by those who strictly followed the principles of Varna and Ashrama. Hiranyakashipu, instead of offering shares of oblations to devatas, he accepted all of them himself only. You see here it is said about Bhumi.
Akrishtapachyatasyasit saptadvipavati mahi tata kamadugha gavo nanascharya padam nabah.
As if in fear of Hiranyakashipu, the planet Earth, which consists of seven islands, delivered food grains without being plowed. Thus it resembled cows, like the Surabhi of the spiritual world, or Kamaduga of heaven. The earth yielded sufficient food, grains, cows, supplied abundant milk, everything out of fear. You see, the modern man is also forcing the earth to give out more yield by using fertilizers. Isn't it? Like, for example, if 1 acre of land can produce X quantity of grains, modern man wants to bring out 5x or 10x quantity of grains. So they are putting fertilizer and extracting. Or they are using tractors. They are plowing very deeply. Similarly, they are having deep hole oil drills to take out all obnoxious petroleum agents, different kinds of byproducts, which pollute the whole earth and create health hazardous situations for the living entities. They are doing like that. Similarly, Hiranyakashipu also, he forced the earth. So Prabhupada is saying this deep hole oil drilling is like what? A child is very mischievous, asking the mother, please give me some tip or what do you call it? Pocket money. Please give me some pocket money. Mother and father are not giving. So suddenly he is putting his hand into father's pocket or mother's purse and pulling out some money and running away. Like that, people are making deep hole oil drilling and taking out things from earth. If you don't give on your own, then we will force you to give. Like that Prabhupada is saying, isn't it? So Prabhupada once heard a tractor. He was sitting in a class. The sound was coming, What is that? Prabhupada asked. Tractor, Prabhupada, they said. Yes. This is like a, modern day mosquitoes, he said. And the Prabhupada, what is it, Prabhupada? He said, mosquito sits on the body and introduces his syringe inside and then takes out the blood, and by the time you reach there, it is gone. Isn't it? Similarly, the modern man is also like a mosquito. He pokes hole on the earth and tries to do deep hole oil drilling, or he puts 200 feet bore. Nowadays, they say that because the bottling plants, when they go to village, practically they are saying 50 kilometers radius, they suck out all the water. And they put such a deep hole drill, sometimes it could be like 400, 500 feet down. So when the farmers, with spending a big money, they put 120 or 150 feet down, they don't get any water. Because the bottling plants, they take out all the water like that. So, and then you have to pay money for your water bottles. You can see that. Eventually, time will come when everybody will have to purchase water. Like that. So, Hiranyakashipu also forced the Mother Earth to give out all this, fruits and milk and everything. Yeah. The rivers were also giving everything. The cows were all giving milk and everything out of fear for him. He, by using force, even the flowers, and so many things. Here it is said, Hiranyakashipu thus passed a long time being very much proud of his opulences and transgressing the laws and regulations mentioned in Shastras. He was therefore subjected to a curse by the four Kumaras who were great Brahmanas. This is an old curse, you know that. And then everyone, including the rulers of the various planets, was extremely distressed because of the severe punishment inflicted upon them by Hiranyakashipu. Fearful and disturbed, unable to find any other shelter, they at last surrendered to the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Now they are going to Lord Vishnu. They are offering a beautiful prayer. Lord Vishnu. Tasyai namostu kashtyayai yatratma haririshwaraha yad gatvarani vartante shantaha sanyasino malaha. See, they are saying, they are offering many prayers. Basically, in after glorifying the Lord in various prayers, now they are asking here. That this Hiranyakashipu has become a great thorn, is creating so much trouble. And then the Lord is speaking here, you see. The voice of the Lord vibrated as follows. The Lord is saying, very beautiful verse. Ma bhaishta vibhudha sreshtaha. Vibhudha sreshtaha means, you know, the learned persons. Vibhudha itself means learned. Vibhudha Sreshtha means the topmost amongst learned persons, O Devatas. Ma Bhaishta, he said. Bhaya is the root word from which comes Bhaishta. Ma Bhaishta means do not fear. Vibhudha Sreshtaha. Sarvesham Badramastuvaha. He's saying, may there be good fortune unto all of you. Maddarshanam Hibhutanam Sarvashreyopapattaye. Lord is saying, you see, my darshanam itself, for all living entities, Sarvashreyopapattaye, he's saying. Sarvashreya means all good fortune will be attained if somebody simply has darshan. Which means he's telling demigods, unnecessarily don't fear. I am there for you personally. And then the Lord is saying, Jnatametasya dauratmyam taite yapa sadasya yat. Jnatam means what? I know everything, what's happening. You don't have to tell me what Hiranyakashipu is doing. Which means the Lord is watching everybody. Who is doing what? I know all about the activities of Hiranyakashipu's Dauratmya. He's saying the nefarious activities of Hiranyakashipu. And then he's saying, please wait patiently until that time. What is that time? So that the Lord will say, when one is envious of demigods, who represent the Supreme Personality of Godhead of the Vedas, which give all knowledge of the cows and the Brahmanas, Vaishnavas and religious principles, and ultimately of me, the Lord says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he and his civilization will be vanquished without delay. It's a very important verse, please repeat after me. Yada Deveshu Vedeshu Goshu Vipreshu Sadhushu Dharme mayi cha vidveshah Sava ashu vinashyati. Very important verse. This is 7.4.27. 7.4.27. See, yada deveshu. Deveshu means if somebody envies the devatas. Vedeshu, Vedas. Goshu means cows. Vipreshu, Brahmanas. Sadhushu, saintly persons who are Vaishnavas. See, Brahmanas are religious people who uphold and maintain religion. And sadhus are paradukkadukhi, the Vaishnavas who spread welfare for everybody. That's why the two are said separately, Vipreshu, Sadhushu. Dharme means, and religious principles. Mayicha, they become envious of me also. Vidveshaha, he says, one becomes envious. Sava ashu vinashyati means very quickly such a person gets destroyed. That's why I heard a lecture of Radha Gopinath Puva. He was telling the modern day Hiranyakashipu civilization will not last long. He said, it's only a matter of time, like Lord came as Narsingadev, picked up Hiranyakashipu and put him on his lap and tore his body like an elephant tears apart the sugar cane. Like that, in the same manner, this kind of atheistic so-called secular culture will be very soon destroyed. Prabhupada also said, it will be destroyed and all people will be running to farm communities that time. That is why all his contemporaries are buying a farm community now only, everywhere. It can go on for some few decades, maybe two, three. Prabhupada said about 2030 or something. By the time everybody will be running, because there will be so much of corruption and so much atrocity in the city. Even now in America, many people are going towards farm communities to have a self-sufficient life because they are fed up with the commercialism and consumerism culture in the city, which is promoting all artificial products and harmful and health hazardous which degrades the body and mind through all sorts of pollution. So, and also cities are godless, they are godless places. So because of which many people who want to preserve their culture and preserve their happy living, they are slowly returning towards farm communities. So here also you find when one becomes envious of demigods, Lord told them like this. And then he says, when Hiranyakashipu teases the great devotee Prahlad, his own son, who is peaceful and sober, who has no enemy, I shall kill Hiranyakashipu immediately, despite the benediction of Brahma. Like that Vishnu is saying. Although Brahma has given a big benediction to him, I will kill this fellow. He says. And then Narada is telling. Then all the demigods became reassured, they became happy. And now, you see, Narada, he speaks in such a way that, you know, Yudhishthira Maharaj will ask questions. It inspires Yudhishthira to ask questions. See, he's saying like this. Hiranyakashipu had four wonderful, well-qualified sons, of whom the one named Prahlad was the best. Indeed, Prahlad was a reservoir of all transcendental qualities because he was an unalloyed devotee of the personality of Godhead. And then he is telling about the qualities of Prahlad. That is Prem Swarup Prabhu, we can read this. It's a very nice verse. Read this translation. That list. That right page, the translation, big translation, yeah.
Translation. The qualities of Maharaj Prahlad, the son of Hiranyakashipu, are described herewith. He was completely cultured as a qualified Brahmana, having very good character and being determined to understand the absolute truth. He had full control of his senses and mind. Like the super soul, he was kind to every living entity and was the best friend of everyone.
See, the example is given of a super soul. A super soul doesn't hate anyone. He actually loves everybody and he is called as Suhrudam. The word Hrit means heart. Suhrut means one who is the best well-wisher of every living being. He acted exactly like that with everybody. Which means he had no enemies and he was the supreme well-wisher of everybody. Yeah.
To respectable persons, he acted exactly like a menial servant. To the poor, he was like a father. To his equals, he was attached like a sympathetic brother.
See, he said for poor people, he was like a father. The poor people may be 50, 60, 70 years old. But Prahlad was a 5-year-old boy. But how can a 5-year-old boy be a father to a 60, 50-year-old man? Because his quality of compassion and his heart was so broad that even the old people considered him like a father. This area.
To his equals, he was attached like a sympathetic brother. And he considered his teachers, spiritual masters and older God brothers to be as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was completely free from unnatural pride that might have arisen.
Why
from
the word unnatural pride is used? Actually, there is a natural pride. The natural pride is that I am a follower of Srila Prabhupada or Bhaksan Saraswati. I come in this Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. So one can have the real pride. The real pride means valuing the good fortune that we have achieved in our life. Real pride. Unnatural pride means, you know, not understanding that whatever qualities I have belongs to Krishna and considering oneself great for having something. That is unnatural pride. So he's saying that he was completely free from the unnatural pride.
He was completely free from unnatural pride that might have arisen from his good education, riches, beauty, aristocracy, and so on. Purport? Although Prahlad Maharaj was born in a family of asuras, he himself was not an asura but a great devotee of Lord Vishnu. Unlike the other asuras, he was never envious of Vaishnavas. He was not agitated when put into danger, and he was neither directly nor indirectly interested in the fruitive activities described in the Vedas. Indeed, he considered everything material to be useless, and therefore he was completely devoid of material desires. He always controlled his senses and life air, and being of steady intelligence and determination, he subdued all lusty desires. O King, Prahlad Maharaja's good qualities are still glorified by learned saints and Vaishnavas, as all good qualities are always found existing in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They also exist forever in his devotee Prahlad Maharaj.
See, the beauty here is Narada is the guru of Prahlad, but the guru is telling the glories of his own disciple. Prahlad's qualities, you know, is appreciating Prahlad's elaborate qualities to Yudhishthira Maharaj. And generally you find a disciple glorifying the guru, but here the guru is glorifying disciple, so much exalted qualities of Prahlad. So Prahlad is a very outstanding character, and later on Narada will say, in any sabha, wherever Vaishnavas discuss about pure devotional service, Prahlad's name will not be missed out. It will be always uttered, he says.
In any assembly,
just now I said that, yeah,
where there are discourses about saints and devotees, O King Yudhishthir, even the enemies of the demons, namely the demigods, what to speak of you, would cite Prahlad Maharaj as an example of a great devotee. Who could list the innumerable transcendental qualities of Prahlad?
Outstanding character, and later on Narada will say, in any sabha, wherever Vaishnavas discuss about pure devotional service, Prahlad's name will not be missed out. It will be always uttered, he says.
In any assembly,
just now I said that, yeah,
where there are discourses about saints and devotees, O King Yudhishthir, even the enemies of the demons, namely the demigods, what to speak of you, would cite Prahlad Maharaj as an example of a great devotee. Who could list the innumerable transcendental qualities of Prahlad Maharaj?
Yeah, now subsequently what he will do, this section is very important for devotees, what's going to come now. Because, see, first he is telling about his qualities, like, you know, Prahlad respected the superiors like this, he treated the people with compassion like a loving father, you know, and now he is going to talk about Prahlad in relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Lord. So how he practiced devotion service and how he experienced a great ecstatic love in relation to Supreme Lord, that's going to be explained now. Go ahead.
Who could list the innumerable transcendental qualities of Prahlad Maharaj? He had unflinching faith in Vasudev, Lord Krishna, the son of Vasudev, and unalloyed devotion to him. His attachment to Lord Krishna was natural.
This is what Prahlad stands for. Unflinching faith or determination. So when we study about Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj, these two personalities were most appreciated by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would hear katha from Bhagavatam. We may be thinking, maybe Mahaprabhu may be asking them to speak from the 10th canto, the Gopi Gita or something, isn't it? Gopi is talking to Krishna. But you hear, when Mahaprabhu was in Navadvip, when they would recite Bhagavatam, you read in Chaitanya Bhagavat, they would be reciting from Dhruva and Prahlad. These two were the most prominent. So, especially for sadhakas, these two are very important pastimes. And we could read them several times because they will give us the determination necessary to progress in spiritual path. So, now if you hear about Prahlada's qualities as a devotee, what type of great devotee, then our heart will develop a lavalyam, a greed for wanting to develop these qualities. And that greed is actually the price for us to gradually attain it. Go ahead.
His attachment to Lord Krishna was natural because of his previous devotional service. Although his good qualities cannot be enumerated, they prove that he was a great soul, Mahatma. From the very beginning of his childhood, Prahlad Maharaj was uninterested in childish playthings. Indeed.
See, very amazing. Prahlad is not interested in childish playthings. Who else was not interested in childish playthings?
Narada.
Narada boy also. We find something similar. Akridanake, it says there. Especially was not interested in cricket. Especially World Cup.
Indeed, he gave them up altogether and remained silent and dull, being fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Since his mind was always affected by Krishna consciousness, he could not understand how the world goes on being fully absorbed in the activities of sense gratification. Prahlad Maharaj was always absorbed in thought of Krishna, thus being always embraced by the Lord.
See, later on he says, Krishna Graha Grahitatma, he says. Krishna Graha means the planet of Krishna. Which is that planet? Goloka Vrinda. Krishna Graha Grahitatma means I am being remotely controlled by the Krishna Graha, he is saying. Just like sometimes you put a Sputnik in orbit, and then you know you sit in a control room and you control the movement of the Sputnik, isn't it? Similarly, the conditioned souls in this material world are conducted by Navagrahas, you know, correct? Like according to your nakshatra, which time you are born, which day and timing you are born. So we are all controlled by, we are all Navagraha Grihitatma. We are controlled by the Navagrahas. But when one becomes a devotee of Krishna, you know, fixed up in remembrance of Krishna, then he becomes a Krishna Graha Grihitatma. He is remotely controlled by Krishna, which means Prahlada's body became an instrument in Krishna's hands. So Krishna was conducting it just like aeroplanes are run on autopilot mode, you know, from remotely. Like that, Prahlad Maharaj's every movement of his hands, legs, body, it was completely controlled by love for Krishna. Yeah.
Prahlad Maharaj was always absorbed in thought of Krishna, thus being always embraced by the Lord. He did not know how his bodily necessities, such as sitting, walking, eating, lying down, drinking and talking, were being automatically performed. Because of advancement in Krishna consciousness, he sometimes cried, sometimes laughed, sometimes expressed jubilation, and sometimes sang loudly. Sometimes upon seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Prahlad Maharaj would loudly call in full anxiety. He sometimes lost his shyness in jubilation and began dancing in ecstasy. And sometimes being fully absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, he felt oneness and imitated the pastimes of the Lord.
Yeah, these are all symptoms of Ashtasattvika Vikar. Like Rupa Goswami writes in Padyavali, a beautiful verse. Parivadatu jano yata tatava nanumukarona nirvishyamaha harirasa madira madati matta bhuvivilita amonata amon nirvishyamaha. He is saying harirasa madira. Madira means what? Liquor. Harirasa madira means what? The hariras. When one becomes intoxicated in Krishna, madati, matta, means when one becomes completely maddened by ecstatic love for Krishna, he says, parivadatu jano yata tatava. Parivadatu means let the people of the world say whatever they want. They may criticize me, find fault with me, they may think I am a fool, but we don't care, he says. We will chant loudly, we will dance jubilantly, and we will roll on the ground. In great transcendental ecstasy. Like that he says, Bhuvi Velutamo. Bhuvi means Bhumi. Bhuvi Velutamo Natamo. Natamo means we will dance. So, in this way, that is a verse by Rupa Goswami, which means a devotee doesn't care for the lokamat, lokalajja. He just blissfully practices spiritual life. Sometimes we go on a harinam, and we are looking left side and right side whether people are all recognizing us to be good devotees. Are they showering flowers or with folding palms? Is there anybody ridiculing us? Because we have image problem. What problem? Yeah. So, especially in neophyte stage, first time when I went for Harinam Sankirtan, that was my first visit. Radha Gopinath Prabhu was taking all the children from the Gurukul, you know, some 20 children, small boys. And he also was taking some college students also. So I had also gone there. So he asked me, if you want to come, you are welcome. So we all went. And as soon as he went to the street, he started playing kartal. He had taken a big kartal, you know, that vampire, playing that. He started dancing. And everybody started dancing except myself. I was a bit shy, you know. I was doing Hare Krishna like this. So then we went from there. The beach was very nearby, just about 10 minutes walk. Went to the beach and they made a big circle and they were dancing. 300 people came and surrounded us. And they were doing such a kirtan. It was out of the world kirtan. They didn't even look at who is watching them. They started jumping. From there only I learned how to play this big kartal. You know, they were doing such a maddening kirtan. Very beautiful tune. They were singing and everybody was in full form. Actually, you know, that was real kirtan because nobody bothered about, none of these boys from Gurukula or the other people bothered about who is saying what or who is thinking what. Hell with what you want to think. They went on. And then when they stopped the kirtan, they saw there were 300 people all around. Then they spoke a few minutes. Then again they did kirtan. So in the Bhagavatam also, in the Navagendra section, there is a beautiful verse which says, Evam vratasva priya nama kirtya jata anurago druta chitta ucchaihi evam hasati roditi rauti gayati unmadavanrityati loka bahya. He says, ucchaihi means very loudly one should sing the holy names. He says, evam swatah, evam vrata svapriya nama kirtya. One takes a, devotee takes a vow to chant and sing and glorify a particular name of the Lord which is very dear to his heart. Jata anurago. Why he calls out the holy name loudly? Because of the anurag born in his heart. Anurag means deep love. With great love he is calling out Krishna's name. Like I told you, the spiritual world, everybody calls Krishna's name with love, great love. Jata, jata means to be born. Jata anurago. Druta chitta means melted heart. Ucchaihi means with a melted heart, full of love, they call out the Lord's names very loudly, remembering his beautiful pastimes. Hasati, roditi, rauti means they laugh loudly sometimes, they cry, sometimes they dance, sometimes they roll on the ground. I told you, Vaishnavas in Navadvip also used to do like this kirtan, very famous kirtan. When the Bengali Vaishnavas were coming towards Jagannath Puri, that time the king Prataprudra along with his spiritual master Sarma Bhattacharya, they were on the top of the ceiling of the palace, top roof of the palace. From there they were watching and all the Vaishnavas were coming. In the front, Advaitacharya was spearheading all of them, behind them all the Vaishnavas. And the king saw with great amazement. He asked, who is that effulgent personality? He asked. And Sarma Bhattacharya explained, that is Advaitacharya, the leader of all the Vaishnavas. Like that, one by one he explained. And then king said, I have never heard a kirtan like this in my life. And Sarma Bhattacharya said, yes, this is called Prem Sankirtan, which springs from the heart of the devotees. So these are the Bengali associates of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And they sang and danced guilelessly, without caring for public opinion. Actually, even today you will find in Navadvip and other places, sometimes you find even the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, when they would go for Harinam, how they would play instruments, how they sing in full absorption. So Prahlad was also doing like this. He was laughing, he was smiling, he was singing, sometimes was weeping. Whenever the Lord showed his darshan and he disappeared from his sight, then he would cry. Go ahead.
Sometimes feeling the touch of the Lord's lotus hands, he became spiritually jubilant.
This is explained by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Krishna at the prema bhakti stage, he reveals bhava bhakti itself. He reveals, for example, if somebody is in a dasa bhav, dasya bhav, then Krishna keeps his tender lotus feet on the head of the devotee, and devotee immediately feels surcharged with transcendental ecstasy by the touch of the Lord's lotus feet. If somebody is a Sakya Bhakta, then Krishna clasps his hand, like he clasps Arjuna's hands, like this. Somebody is in Vatsalya Bhav and cries tears wanting to meet Krishna, then Krishna wipes out the tears, like Mother Yashoda. Somebody is in Madhurya Bhav, then Krishna embraces them. So in this way, the different devotees experience different touch of Krishna. It's called as Krishna shows them the darshan, saundarya. Sausvarya means Krishna plays on his flute, which is very melodious, entering their ears and hearts. Saukumarya, saurabhya. Saurabhya means the smell, fragrance of Krishna's body. These are the preliminary symptoms. Eventually, it ends in seeing Krishna face to face and talking to Krishna, and then one has a direct connection with Krishna after that. So this was the stage Prahlad Maharaj was in. You see, Lord was putting his lotus feet on his head. Yeah, go ahead.
He became spiritually jubilant and remained silent, his hair standing on end.
Spiritually jubilant, materially silent. So example is given by one of the acharyas. He says, generally people expect that the ocean should be calm. But on a full moon day, the ocean rises with very high tides. Similarly, a devotee is generally sober and calm. Materially, he is silent. But when Krishna Chandra appears in his heart, a devotee goes mad. And then with high tides of prema arising in his heart, a devotee doesn't care for external opinion of people. He behaves like a person who is agitated by prema.
His hair standing on end and tears gliding down from his half-closed eyes because of his love for the Lord. Because of his association with perfect unalloyed devotees who had nothing to do with anything material, Prahlad Maharaj constantly engaged in the service of the Lord's lotus feet. By seeing his bodily features when he was in perfect ecstasy, persons very poor in spiritual understanding became purified. In other words, Prahlad Maharaj bestowed upon them transcendental bliss. My dear Queen Yudhishthir, the demon Hiranyakashipu tormented this exalted, fortunate devotee, although Prahlad was his own son.
Maharaj Yudhishthir, by saying like this, Narada is inspiring Yudhishthir to ask more questions. Now Yudhishthir is going to ask, really? How can any father or mother desire to torture such a sweet child? He had all the good qualities from a material point of view, spiritual point of view. Who will want to give any pain to such a child? Like that, now Yudhishthira Maharaj will ask subsequently. Then Narada goes on to explain the behavior of Hiranyakashipu and behavior of Prahlad. That section is a very elaborate section, because Narada now has to explain about how Prahlad first of all became a devotee. Then also he will explain about how he went to Gurukul, behavior of his teacher Shandamarka, and Prahlad remaining clean and detached from bad association. Rather, he will convert his demoniac schoolmates into devotees of Krishna. All that section will come subsequently. Very beautiful section. So today morning we discussed two extreme examples, Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad. Hiranyakashipu was a die-hard materialist who was making an one-sided attempt to succeed in his material life without reference to Krishna. And Prahlad Maharaj was a determined devotee, unshakable devotee, though born in the family of demons. And pure-hearted, very ideal example for the devotees to follow. So I will stop with this. We are going to sing Karavalamba Sutram. Is there? Just come. So you only one copy? Please give copies to everybody. This is a very famous stotram. Just like you all know, Shankaracharya has written Jagannath Ashtakam, which is Kadachit Kalindi, is glorified. Similarly, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers accepted Lord Shankaracharya as a covered personalist who has glorified the Lord very sweetly, beautifully. There is a Gopi Ashtakam also has written. Similarly, this Karavalamba Sotram, very beautiful verse.